Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe's main opposition party predicts victory in Wednesday's elections.
One of my tasks upon assuming the reins of government is to bring the nation together. We will say one people, one nation.
The Zimbabwe Human Rights Association plans to release a report about voter fears today, Tuesday. Gabon's diaspora says the government has canceled many voting centers ahead of Saturday's vote. And opposition leader will address opposition unity and pre-election violence in Liberia. ECOWAS rejects a plan by Niger's coup leaders to relinquish power within 3 years.
Are no longer going to get into drawn-out haggling, you know, with people who have usurped power against their own constitution.
And the Somali government offers amnesty to Al-Shabaab militants. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In Zimbabwe, the Opposition Citizens Coalition for Change, the CCC, which is the ruling ZANU-PF's main rival, held its last rally on Monday in Harare, vowing to win the elections, restore the economy, and unite Zimbabweans. Rutendo Mawere in Harare has the story.
Speaking in Harare at a mass public meeting Monday of the Opposition Citizens Coalition for Change, dubbed Game Over Rally, presidential candidate Nelson Chamisa expressed confidence that his party will win this week's polls.
And our government, we are going to restore the economy. We want to build a $100 billion economy. We want to create 2.5 million jobs. We have all the work done and laid out. Try us, you will see what we are going to do.
Chamisa, who will be competing against the current president Emmerson Mnangagwa for the second time, expressed concern over disunity in the country and promised to work with the ZANU-PF leader after defeating him Wednesday.
We are too divided on the basis of politics. One of my tasks upon assuming the reins of government is to bring the nation together. We will say one people, one nation. Let us build the country together. Advise where you can. Where we need to work together, we will look. We are not going to be retributive.
Tafadzwa Kamizi from Harare West was among the thousands that gathered at the Dust Freedom Square in the capital to hear Chamisa.
In his message, he reiterated that he's not going to be very retributive to President Emmerson Mnangagwa in his regime, but he's going to allow the country to grow. We need to go back to the growth law. We need also to go back to the constitutionalism.
Another supporter, Darlington Mujondiwa from Kwazana East, believes they will speed to victory.
On the 23rd, we are going to overwhelmingly win this election. Whether they like it or not, the people of Zimbabwe are tired. They want change. They want to win. They want to beat Mnangagwa. ZANU-PF failed. I'm now 45 years. I haven't ever worked in a company. I don't have a payslip. I don't know what is a payslip. It's like what? I don't know.
ZANU-PF, however, maintains that they are on a track to rejuvenate the economy and develop in the country. ZANU-PF has also announced victory in Wednesday's polls. In 2018, Chamisa stood as the presidential candidate for the MDC Alliance, or Movement for Democratic Change Alliance, before it was rocked by division. He followed that up in 2022 when he formed the Citizens Coalition for Change. Zimbabwe holds presidential, parliamentary and municipal council elections on August the 23rd. For VOA Africa, this is Rutendo Mawere in Harare.
The Zimbabwe Human Rights Association plans to release a report about the situation in the country today, Tuesday, on the eve of the general election. Zikamai Bairi, the national director for the organization, says analysis of compiled data shows a lot of communities live in fear ahead of the polls. He tells viewers Peter Clotty that human rights violations committed during the election process will go unreported due to the refusal to allow the human rights defenders to monitor the vote.
It is a mixed environment. At one level, we have recorded incidences of violence, mainly in some rural constituencies. There were some incidences in Dhaka where some traditional leaders were moving around asking people that when they come to vote, they will be recorded, the serial numbers of their ballot papers. So basically misleading them into doubting the secrecy of the vote as a way of intimidating them to vote for the ruling party. We have also recorded incidences in which some observers, both local and international human rights groups, have been prevented from observing the election. A prominent human rights lawyer, Musa Kika, Arnold Tsunga, and the director for Zimbabwe Peace Project, Jesina Mukoko, are some of the local activists who are human rights defenders who lead in the human rights space. We have been prevented from observing the upcoming election.
Some people will suggest that these human rights defenders that you're talking about have announced their strong opposition to the ZANU-PF. Supporters of the government are saying they are biased. So even if they observe the election, they are going to remain biased, irrespective of how things went. What's your response?
There is no evidence in the alleged loyalty to the opposition. This has always been the government's accusation to civil society. But the people we are speaking about are credible human rights leaders in the sector. Jesina Mukoko is the director of the Zimbabwe Peace Project. And these are respected civil society leaders. And even if somebody suspected them of a certain loyalty, there is no evidence on the ground. This is a violation of their human right to participate in this process as human rights activists. They've got the right to observe the elections because they are human rights defenders, and their interest is very clear, is to defend human rights. So the government, by throwing them out, it means that the human rights violations committed during the process are going to go unreported, which is a shame because it's an important pillar of a democratic process.
Well, supporters of the ZANU-PF government say that accusations by some local and international journalists who did not get accredited did not meet the requirement, because others have met requirements and they have been accredited to cover the elections.
I think if the government has nothing to hide, this would be an opportunity to showcase democracy at work to international journalists. A few days ago, the Minister of Information hosted journalists on a tour to come and see the beauty of Zimbabwe. They were taken to expensive Victoria Falls. It is a great opportunity for them to also show democracy at work.
Zika Maimbari is the National Director of the Zimbabwe Human Rights Association. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty. Gabon voters go to the polls on Saturday, August 26, in presidential and parliamentary elections, where incumbent President Ali Bongo Ondimba, whose family has ruled the country for 56 years, is running for re-election. Ondimba has changed the constitution several times to guarantee the family's continued rule. Lawrence Ndong is the president of the Gabonese group Stand Up Free People. She tells me that many in the Gabonese diaspora may not be able to vote because the government has cancelled many voting places.
The problem is that all of the Gabonese who live outside of the country, a lot of them cannot vote because the government decided to remove the place vote for them. For example, in Paris, we had in last election place vote in Paris, Marseille, Bordeaux, Nantes, Lyon, Rennes, Strasbourg, Toulouse. And they removed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 places for vote. We can vote only in Paris and Bordeaux. And what will do all of the Gabonese? And they have been involved, the vote office, and they have been involved in the electoral list. But they cannot vote. It's the same thing for all South Africa. All Gabonese in South Africa cannot vote. In Ghana, in Congo Brazzaville, for example.
Have Gabonese in the diaspora voted in the past at these locations?
Yes. And for this election, the government sends people to that city and country to involve Gabonese for voting. So they have been involved in May and June of this year. And the election is for next Saturday. So now is the time for Gabonese to go and take the voter's card to the embassy. But the Minister of Foreign Affairs take a note to say that for all Gabonese outside of the country, they can vote only in 14 places. But they have been involved in 31 places.
Did the government say why it canceled these particular voting areas? Did the government explain?
No, we have no explanation. They explained nothing. And even in Paris, those who was involved in Marseille or Toulouse or Nantes, until now, they don't know where they will vote. In Paris, in Bordeaux, they don't know. Those who have been involved in Berlin, they cannot vote. There is no place for voting in Berlin. No place for voting in Geneva. No place for voting in Canada, for example. But last election, Gabonese in Canada vote in Toronto. But we have no explanation by the government. It's the silence.
You said everyone has a voting card. So what are you going to do on election day?
Some of them, for example, for me, I don't have my voting card. I have been registered in Paris, but I voted last election. So my name was in the list. But until now, I didn't receive my voting card. So they start to distribute voting card yesterday. Only yesterday, and the vote is for this Saturday.
Thank you so much again. It's so good to talk with you.
Thank you, Jen.
Lawrence Undong is the president of the Gabonese group Stand Up Free People. She was speaking with us from Paris, France. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 22nd. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. In Liberia, the leader of one of the three main political parties in the country's October 10 parliamentary and presidential election says he believes the opposition will coalesce in a possible runoff. Alexander Cummings of the collaborating political party says if the vote is free and fair, it is possible that incumbent President George Weah may not even make the second round. This after the president's party has said that he would defeat the opposition in the first round. Cummings said he is disappointed by reports of early campaign violence. He tells me that he is calling on all parties, especially President Weah, to ensure that the elections are free, fair, transparent, and peaceful.
Very disappointing, James. You know, we all signed the Farmington Declaration. We all pledged to participate and make sure our partisans participate in free, fair, transparent, and peaceful elections. And so for there to be some violence from the get-go, you know, it's quite disappointing. And I call on all of my colleagues and other political actors to let's ensure we lead by example and let's ensure these elections are free, fair, transparent, and peaceful. But most importantly, James, I call on the government of Liberia. President Weah has the constitutional obligation to ensure these elections are secure and are peaceful. Yes, we have to play our part, and we will, but he controls the National Elections Commission, he controls the National Police, all the security apparatus, and it's incumbent upon him, again, to make sure that his party, his institution, that's the example, is set the tone.
Every time I speak with any politician from Liberia, especially ahead of the elections, I'm almost compelled to ask the question about the opposition. I was just speaking about the Gabon election this week and how the opposition came together to go against President Bongo. So how are you, the opposition in Liberia, how are you approaching? Are you still approaching the election separately?
Yeah. But, James, there are three main contenders for the presidency in Liberia. And that is not a big number, though there are others on the ballot. The reality is, any and all polling shows that there are three main contenders, Alexander Cummings, Joseph Boakai, and George Weah. Whoever gets to the runoff, that is where I think the opposition will coalesce. But I think for now, it's fair, it's okay. And by the way, President Weah has a record to defend, a record that is not a good one, a failed record. And there is no way that President Weah will win in the first round as they are projecting themselves. So I don't buy the argument that the opposition is fragmented and therefore we cannot win the incumbent.
I know you have just alluded to this particular point I'm about to make, and that is President George Weah is talking about a first-round victory wiping the opposition off the map. What's your take on the president's view?
I think the president is projecting that view because they want to justify rigging, cheating this election. And by projecting that view, when it happens, you know, people say, oh, but it was going to happen anyway because it's been subliminally planted in people's minds. But the good news is we are dispelling that just as aggressively as they're pushing it, and not just us, because the other major opposition party is also claiming they're winning the first round. We are also claiming we're winning the first round, so that we're trying to level the playing field psychologically. Because, again, if you look at the history, the recent history of our elections, nobody has won a first-round victory.
Mr. Cummings, thank you very much, and good luck on the campaign trail.
Thank you, James.
Alexander Cummings is the leader of the opposition Collaborating Political Party of Liberia. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. The West African Economic Bloc, ECOWAS, has rejected a plan by Niger's coup leaders to relinquish power within 3 years. Timothy Obiezu reports from Nigeria's capital, Abuja, on what steps West African leaders could take next.
The ECOWAS Commissioner for Political Affairs, Peace and Security, Abdel Fattah Moussa, spoke to a Nigerian television channel Monday. Fattah Moussa said the three-year transition plan proposed by Niger's military junta was unacceptable, adding that the regional bloc, ECOWAS, insists on the return of constitutional order as quickly as possible. He said the junta proposed the transition plan as a distraction to remain in power for longer.
In some other countries under military regime in West Africa, they had about 3 years, and already they are negotiating with their population to have another 18 months. What legitimacy do they have, you know, to already begin with 3 years, and we know it is not going to end there?
In a televised address Saturday, Niger's junta leader Abdurrahmane Tchiani said the country would return to civilian rule within 3 years. He spoke soon after meeting with an ECOWAS delegation led by Nigeria's former head of state, Abdusalam Abubakar. Tchiani urged political parties to submit their vision for the transition within 30 days. He said, quote, "Our ambition is not to confiscate power. Transition period will not exceed 3 years," end quote. It was the first time the junta had met with ECOWAS representatives since the July 26th coup, raising hopes of continued dialogue. But Fattah Moussa says it is the pressure from ECOWAS sanctions and threat of military intervention that is making the junta more compliant.
We are no longer going to get into drawn-out haggling, you know, with people who have usurped power against their own constitution.
Idayat Hassan is the director of the Center for Strategic and International Studies, an Abuja-based pro-democracy think tank. She says ECOWAS must not give in to the transition plan by Niger's coup leaders.
Previously, putschists were never allowed to benefit from their push, as much as there is zero tolerance for unconstitutional change in government. If ECOWAS allows for this 3 years transition, it is going to be following in the footsteps of Mali and in Burkina and in Guinea.
Soldiers of the Presidential Guard, who deposed President Mohamed Bazoum last month, continue to hold him and his family hostage. ECOWAS recently activated a standby force to intervene in Niger if negotiations fail. Defense chiefs who met in Accra last week said they're ready to take action as soon as an order is given. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
The Somali government has offered amnesty to al-Shabaab militants amid an ongoing military offensive in the central parts of the country. The move is seen by some analysts to remove al-Shabaab fighters from the battlefield and thereby weaken the insurgent group. Ahmed Mohammed reports from Mogadishu.
Amnesty offer is part of a widening approach by the Somali government in its fight against the Al-Shabaab militant group. The government has deployed the military, targeted financial networks, and waged an ideological battle against the group. The announcement by the National Counter-Terrorism Center to open doors for defectors follows President Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud's remarks that Al-Shabaab leadership was not willing to negotiate with the government. Abdulaziz Hussein Isaac is a security analyst with Hamid bin Khalifa Civilization Center. He says the amnesty offer to Al-Shabaab is a strategic tactic by the Somali government to further weaken the group. Already, he says, there are reports of discontent among the foot soldiers that they are not getting support from the top leadership as the government forces pile pressure on them. The federal government launched a large-scale offensive against Al-Shabaab in the Muduk and Galgadut regions in central parts of the country. Kalan militias also provided support to the forces, which the government says are on the course to finish the first phase of the operation. Isaac says amnesty might also provide the government forces with intelligence about the group. If well coordinated, the amnesty could be a plus for the government. He says if the fighters desert their positions, the government forces will not only face little resistance, but will also benefit from intelligence from the defectors. Despite the expected positive outcomes, some analysts think an amnesty offer may not tilt the scales of the war. Abdulrashid Farah Ali, a security and a political analyst at Linking Governance, a policy and a strategy consultancy in Mogadishu, warns not to expect too much from the amnesty offer. He says there is no guarantee the amnesty will net a major gain for the government. There might be just a few defectors out of thousands of soldiers, he says. And while it has a psychological effect on the war against Al-Shabaab, it may not change the course of the war. Several senior figureheads in Al-Shabaab have defected in the past. The current Minister for Religious Affairs was the founder and the second most senior leader before he defected to the government in 2017, and he is currently leading the ideological warfare against the group. Ali says if the amnesty does work and several militants defect, it may force Al-Shabaab on the negotiation table. He says major defections are unlikely, but if there are some defections, Al-Shabaab might be forced to consider negotiation or rather face humiliation. Ahmed Mohamed for VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
And that's it for this Tuesday, August 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Botti, Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.
The Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-minute VOA newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA, your trusted source for news and information.